Okay, Dr. Chadwick, as I'll introduce a little bit later, is going to be presenting material from research that's been going on for several years now, where he will take and go into universities, and he's done dozens and dozens of universities, it may be over 100 now, he may mention how many, and he goes into their archives, and he goes into the master's theses that have been written by their students, their master's students, or maybe some of their doctoral students, and he'll dig into their research material, and he'll take that research and put it into a data bank on a computer. And you'll look at what's been going on in the geological layers. And in brief, at the Precambrian layer below, you don't find any fossils and so forth because there was no organic matter at that time. But he goes through the different layers of the geological column and he finds out what direction the currents were going. It's what's called paleocurrents. Finding out what directions the currents were going. And he'll explain how these currents were determined by the way twigs made scratches in the sand or by the way the sand made ripples as it was deposited. And he will compute all of this material and put it into the computer, and it will show how the currents were traveling at one particular level in that geological strata. And he will put that into what he calls the rose diagram. Now, you can figure the petals on a rose, and the petal will show the direction that the current is traveling. And there may be some petals that go this way. So direction is determined by the way you see it on the diagram, whether it's north, south, east, or west, and the number of measurements of those paleocurrents, the data that's been inputted, will be determined by the length of the petal. The longer the petal, the more information there is on that particular direction. And he goes through all these different levels, and he'll go through that and explain it to you as he goes. But at least you got a little introduction to it at this time. All right? All right, let's go ahead and we'll run the video. But first, let's have just a brief word of prayer. I'm sorry. Let's bow our heads, please. Father in heaven, we thank you for your blessings, for your grace. We thank you for the food which we just had that was lovingly prepared in both of these churches. We thank you for the blessings we've had last night and this morning and for all that's going to follow this afternoon with this information. Please come into our midst and be with us. Help us to understand clearly the information that is shared that we may be able to share it with others. Thank you again for your many blessings. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen. I wanted to say a little bit about Dr. Chadwick here too. Dr. Chadwick is professor of biology and zoology at the Southwestern Adventist University in Keene, Texas. He's been involved with this research around the world for a number of times. He's chair of the biology department, incidentally. And he has a wedding on in Southern California today. And I think his son that's getting married, the bride is from this area. And I don't know her, but she's from around here in Fresno somewhere. And he was so torn. He wanted to be to this with all of his heart. But I says, no, you better go to the wedding, I think. But he really wanted to be here. So the actual video that we're going to be watching is not his most recent one that I have. I had one that was just filmed a few weeks ago, but the slides that were shown on the screen did not come through very clearly. So what I will say is that the data he's showing here is involving North America. He has now increased his scope of his research to Central America, South America, and over into Europe, and he's finding similar results. So what you see here, just magnify it around the world. Okay? Thank you.
Here. Some of you have been asking, where did I go when I left Loma Linda? And you're curious to know why I won't tell you. That's because if you find out what a wonderful place I live in, you'll all move out there and Texas won't be so great anymore. You all know that Texans love Texas. Dr. Roth, in his presentation, has already laid the groundwork for what I have to say, and that is, geology is in desperate need of a new model. A model that not only encompasses the data that is available now, but does away with some of the problem areas that face geology at present. This model is a heartfelt need for those of us that are concerned about creationism. And we're concerned with anything that we can do which will help to advance our understanding of the history of this earth. It's an exciting opportunity to investigate data and to see where it leads. What can we learn about the history of this earth by studying data, specifically data that has to do with the history, the origin, and the passage of time in the development of the earth's crust? One kind of data has been accentuated in the last 3 decades. Prior to that time, it wasn't generally recognized as being significant, but in the last 30 years, the direction of movement of currents during deposition of sediments has captured the attention of geology and has been a major consideration in the study of geology. About 20 years ago, we became aware of the potential usefulness of this kind of data. And we have worked on that for a long time. But it's only during the past 3 years that we have concentrated intensively on developing a database that tells us about the movement of currents on the Earth's surface. What I'm going to do tonight is to try to explain why the data for the movement of sediments on the Earth's surface demand the development of a new model for sedimentation and the Earth's history. At the same time, we'll try to develop some kind of understanding of where this model might take us and what some of its features might be. I'm going to begin with a brief introduction to the subject and explain a few terms that we'll be using tonight, and then I will present the data in a very broad brush. I'm not going to try to go into details and correlations and develop symmetries tonight. That work has just barely begun. But I have seen things in the broad view which I want to share with you tonight, and I will be doing that. I need to explain a little bit about where the data comes from. The geologic literature has, in the last 30 years, has had a number of papers which focused attention on these currents that flowed on the Earth's surface in the past. We worked on developing this data out of the published literature, and after 10 years, we had exhausted the available journals. I suspected that there was still a lot more data, because certain areas of the Earth's crust had very little coverage. And one day, I took a trip down to the University of Texas at Austin, and I spent the day there going through the theses in the geology department. Unfortunately, they had one of the largest collections in the world, and it took me a long time to go through them. There were over 1,300 volumes, and I had to go through each one section by section. It took me 2 whole days. But when I was done, I had 100 theses. 100 theses that had unpublished data that represented the broad area of Central Texas. It then hit me that I had my work cut out for me for the next couple of years, because I had to visit every major university in North America, go through the geologic collections, study their thesis titles, and try to deduce which ones might have data, and then search those particular theses and dig out the data. In that period of time, I have accumulated over 1,500 theses that had unpublished data in them. The work you'll see tonight represents 2,600 different references. 80% of that is encompassed in what I'm going to show you tonight. The title I have chosen is Megatrends in Paleocurrents. What do I mean by megatrends? This is North America. We are going to look at the totality of the data for North America in terms of paleocurrents and consider what the meaning of that might be. So that's mega means big. It means the whole of North America. I'm also looking at the globe, at the entire world, but I've discovered the intensity of data that's required means that I need to concentrate on one area at a time. I'm pretty much done with North America, and I'm going to show you that data tonight. What is a paleocurrent? A paleocurrent is a fossil form that indicates the direction of movement of sediment. One of the types of fossil forms that shows direction of movement is called crossbedding. Here you can see an example of cross-bedding where the sand moving in this direction comes up over the top of this hill, and suddenly it finds airspace which is dead. Therefore, the sand, in this case, wind current is no longer competent to carry the sand, and the sand falls out and forms a line in the sediment which indicates the direction of movement, in this case from right to left. Here is a modern dune that was studied in great detail back a few years ago, and you can see clearly the cross-bedding in this dune sediment. Now, you have to know exactly what direction the beds lie, but here at least you can say the movement was in this direction, in this layer. Here's some more, a close-up of some cross-bedding. In this particular section, the little beds are pointing in this direction. The current movement was from right to left. Here's another example in the Grand Canyon, Coconino Sandstone. Here again, the beds indicate movement of the water or wind that deposited this layer was from right to left. Well, that's cross-bedding. That's one of the major indicators that is used in developing paleocurrent data. Data that tells us which way the current, usually water, was flowing when the sediment was deposited. Another indicator that's commonly used is ripple marks. Dr. Roth mentioned these a while ago. This is a modern example of ripples where the wind has blown the sand in this direction. The ripples are over-steepened in this direction, indicating movement from right to left again in this slide. Here are some ancient ripples. These are fossil examples that again indicate movement from right to left. The over-steepened side of the ripple tells us which direction the depositing current was moving. Another example here. So, cross-bedding, ripple marks, another type of structure which gives us clues as to the direction of movement of moving sediment are things that are called grooves and flutes. Grooves, such as these, flutes, indicate a sense to the current, not just direction. Direction, by the way, means a position on the compass without telling whether it's to the right or to the left. Sense indicates that it's going to the right. So in this case of grooves, you get a direction but not a sense. In the case of flutes, you get both direction and sense. So you can tell what direction the sediment was moving at the time it was deposited. Another very subtle form are these little lines that you see in the rock here. Those are called parting lineations. They also give a direction, but not sense generally. Right here we see a structure that looks like a little flame, called a flame structure, and it's usually overturned in the direction of movement of the sediment. Another indication that in this case the sediment was moving from left to right. A fourth type of indicator of direction of movement, if I can get this, is what's called imbrication. Imbrication is what happens when you have a line, an array of dominoes, and you push one end and they all fall over. They form an array in which one is leaning on the next one in a direction that gives the maximum stability in a flowing fluid. And thus we can tell if one rock is resting against another one in a stable position from one direction but not the other, we can say that imbrication tells us which direction the current was flowing. And finally, sometimes we can get directional indication from fossils. In this case, these are modern shells in a lag deposit. There really isn't any direction here because the current is moving in two directions at least. But fossils very often are oriented in the fossil record, and we can use those orientations to get a general idea of the direction of movement of the fluid. Well, these are the basic types of information that we use to try to tell what direction water or fluid, I'm going to just use water in the general sense of a fluid, was flowing when the layers were deposited on the Earth's surface. What does the data look like? This points out another problem that we run into right away. This is the data on North America for the Paleozoic. Now, this is these little red lines that you see on there are individual sites. Those are not individual measurements. Those are individual sites represented in the Paleozoic. And you can see that it would be very difficult to make sense out of the data as it lies. What do you make of this, for example? Well, you can zoom in with a computer, you can zoom in close and take a look at those arrows, but you'll find out the closer you get, the more arrows you see, the more confusing it gets. So we've developed some techniques to try to make the data meaningful in spite of the fact that there is a great deal of data. I'm going to show you what some of those are. This is a grid which I've just superimposed so you can see the boxes. I've taken all the data in this box right here and summarized it as a single arrow. Now, paleocurrent data is vectoral. That is, it is directional and also has a magnitude if you're combining things together. These arrows have been treated with a Rayleigh statistic so that the arrow represents a mean direction and the length of the arrow indicates a significance. And we can look at the data that way. So each one of those boxes then represents a group of data being summarized as a single vector. We can make the boxes bigger, and as you make them bigger, you begin to see more and more detail. Again, these are Rayleigh-treated data, so they are statistically significant. The ones that you can see, those like this, are not significant. We can make bigger arrows, and in fact, we can make the arrows move, and one of my projects that I'm working on right now is a video showing the reconstruction of these currents through time. But in the long run, arrows fail because they don't tell you what the data really looks like. So we are using tonight, and in general we'll be using, I think, another type of indicator of direction, which is called a Rose diagram. A Rose diagram has a center, in this case, in the center of the circle, and each of the petals of the rose, in this case 22 degrees, each of those petals has a magnitude indicated by the length of the petal. So you can see here that this rose displays not only the general direction of the data, but also the magnitude of the data. We can also make more or less roses in smaller increments so that we can look at the data in particular localities. By the way, those figures that you see, such as right there, are the number of measurements in that particular rose. The next question I want to approach is, what are sedimentary basins? This is a question that we have to answer before we can begin to understand the significance of this data. In this case, we're looking at a basin called the Gulf of Mexico. Gulf of Mexico receives sediment from a number of different areas. And that sediment comes from North America, it comes from Central America, it comes from South America, and it accumulates in the basin. Now, if you were to analyze the modern currents in the Gulf of Mexico, you would find that there were contributions from the clockwise rotation of the Gulf Stream through the basin. You would find that there are contributions from the Mississippi River up here. You would find that there are contributions from runoff all the way along the boundary of this basin, and you would find that there are longshore currents that are moving the sediment one way and the other. If you were to summarize all the currents for the Gulf of Mexico, you would probably find that they are random. That is, they are meaningless over the whole basin. Therefore, they would only be useful if you wanted to study what was happening down here or up here. So basins, which are a fundamental tool in geology, and I'll show you some examples. These are just some rough diagrams showing some of the basins that geologists think were on the North American continent during the Paleozoic. This one here, for example, is the Appalachian Basin. It was believed originally that the Appalachian Basin was receiving sediment from the north, northeast in this direction, the north and west. But they looked at paleocurrent data down here, and they found out that the sediment seemed to be coming from off the shore. So they invented a land off there called Appalachia, which fed the sediments in from this direction. Other of these basins also should have sediment influx from all the margins of the basin, if it is a real valid concept. Thus, if you were to average the currents over a single basin, you shouldn't get a more or less random or meaningless set of data. If you were to average the directions of sediment all over North America, which would be a foolish thing to do from the contemporaneous geologist's thinking, you should see meaningless data, and it should be very close to random. Here's another example. This is a series of basins out in Colorado. We've got a little closer view here. This is the Front Range uplift. That's the Colorado Rockies. There's a basin here. The Denver Basin should be receiving sediment from this direction. Central Colorado Trough would be receiving sediment from the Front Range uplift and from the Uncompahgre uplift. Taos Trough should be receiving sediment this direction. Eagle Basin, that direction. Colorado Basin, this direction. And remember, every basin has margins all the way around it. So the idea is, if you look at conventional models for geological deposition, which involve basins, in those basins you should see more or less uniform distribution of paleocurrent data. All right, we're almost ready to look now. We have one more thing to cover. You might as well try to get this under your belt tonight if this is new to you, because you're going to see this tomorrow. I have a feeling I borrowed this slide from one of tomorrow's speakers. The geologic column is made up of a series of different eras and systems or periods right here. And when we speak of the geologic column, we're talking about things from Precambrian, Paleozoic, Mesozoic, Cenozoic. Precambrian at the bottom, Paleozoic next, Mesozoic next, Cenozoic next. The Paleozoic starts with Cambrian, Ordovician, Silurian, Devonian, Mississippian, Pennsylvanian, Permian, then Mesozoic, Triassic, Jurassic, Cretaceous. Then in the Cenozoic, Paleocene, Eocene, Oligocene, Miocene, and Pliocene. Notice the order over here for the Cenozoic and over here for the Mesozoic and Paleozoic. We're going to go, starting up here, we're going to go down through the geologic column, and we're going to look at each one of these units and ask ourselves, what does the paleocurrent data for all of North America lumped together look like, and what does it mean? We're going to start with the Cenozoic. And this is what the data looks like on a map. You can see where Cenozoic data is located. And these little stars, by the way, are the colleges and universities that I got data from. And you can see that right up in here in North and South Dakota. I haven't been there yet, and I need to get there, but there's no data from that area. So it indicates how important it was to visit these various places, because each of them gave me data for that region. This is the Pliocene, the very uppermost Cenozoic. Notice the distribution of data looks more or less non-meaningful. It's not the kind of data you would want to find if you were trying to demonstrate something. And if you do a Raleigh statistic on the distribution, you'll find that it's not significantly different from random at the 5% level. So Pliocene with 11,859 different vectors included says that there is no significant trend over the totality of North America. No significant trend in the Pliocene. Alright, let's look at Miocene next. That's the next one down. 8,327 measurements. And again, we aren't immediately smitten by directionality here. And the Raleigh statistic says there is no significant trend in this data. Oligocene, for some reason, does not have enough data to say much about it. Only 223 data point. So I'm not going to say anything about that tonight, but it turns out it's a very important point in our study, because when we get to the next period, the Eocene, we will see some directionality. Here's the Eocene. Notice that there is a fair degree of scatter to the data. This is 16,644 hard-earned graduate student measurements out on the outcrop. And we do have a distinct trend toward the south. A distinct trend that is significant toward the south. Paleocene, the next one down, the bottom of the Cenozoic, almost what you might say is a striking trend. Almost no data to the west. Almost all the data is going to the east. 9,675 measurements. All right, so we've seen now that Miocene and Pliocene, the top two units of the Cenozoic, show very different trends than Eocene and Paleocene. Now we're going to drop down into the Mesozoic, and we're going to start with the Upper Cretaceous. And this shows you the distribution of data in the Mesozoic. You can see that there's a lot of data over here in the western United States, not much over in the east. Just as was the case for Paleocene, Cretaceous is headed east. Very unexpected. What kind of a basinal model would have all of the currents, virtually all of the currents, going toward the east? 61,000, by the way, in case you didn't notice that. 61,000 data points in that data. Lower Cretaceous, still toward the east, but a little bit more toward the south now. Most of the data is in this hemicircle here. 18,272 data points. Jurassic, still going toward the east, but getting a little more scattered toward the west. And finally, in the very bottom of the Mesozoic, we have the Triassic, 18,000 data points. Now the trend is reversed, and we're headed toward the west and north, northwest. Again, what kind of a model, what kind of a model of Earth's history allows you to have virtually all the currents going one way in one period, and most of the currents going the opposite direction in the next period? That's the Triassic. Now we're going to enter the Paleozoic era. Paleozoic era consists of the layers that have life in them that are lowest down in the geologic column. Paleozoic data is pretty well distributed across North America, as you can see. A lot of data in the east, in the central region, in the west, and up in North and South Dakota, not much of it showing. Some up in Canada and up into Alaska as well. Permian, the uppermost layer in the Paleozoic. Data is going, the directionality here is very stridently toward the south. Pennsylvania, 25,000 measurements. That's a lot of data. Pennsylvania is going toward the south and moving toward the west. Mississippian. Data now indicates the predominant direction of paleocurrents is toward the west. Devonian. Even more striking, toward the west and heading a little bit north. Silurian, look at the data. Almost all 12,000 measurements are headed toward the north and west. Ordovician, a little more scatter, back toward the west and even a little bit toward the south. But still, predominantly, just very little data here, and that data is going to be very interesting to see where it comes from, but very little data in this hemicircle. The vast majority of the data is over here. And finally, the Cambrian, 56,611. Sounds like a significant number to me. And you can see that virtually all of the Cambrian paleocurrents are directed toward the southwest. Now, I've lumped these all together in the three eras, so you can look at them just for review. Cenozoic looks like that. When you lump all the data together, it does not indicate a clear trend. Now, included in that now is the Eocene and Paleocene data, which did show some trend. So the fact that the overall data does not show a clear trend is indicative that in the Cenozoic, the data is very different from, for example, the Mesozoic, where you do see a trend. Even though there's a lot of scatter, most of the data is headed east. 125,000 data points. And finally, the Paleozoic, 169,000 data points, and the directionality is clearly toward the southwest. Well, I want to run back through these quickly just to give you a better picture of the change, and I'm going to go a little faster and say less, so I just want you to watch the direction of the paleocurrent rows as I go. Skip these first three, which are the... Oops. Pushed the wrong button. Okay. Starting now in the Cambrian, I want you to watch what happens to the direction of these currents. Okay, I could have the lights on, please. What does it mean? What kind of a model allows you to have, and I'm going to say all here, and what I mean is most, but it's easier to say all. What kind of a situation, a global situation, allows you to have all of the currents moving in one direction during one time during the geologic column, swinging to the north, swinging back to the south, and then swinging to the east, and then back down to the south again? Does that sound like it's studying what's going on in geologic basins? Does this sound like what you would expect on the margins of North America today? Conventional models suggest that you shouldn't see anything meaningful if you look at the summarized data like you've looked at tonight. And yet you can't deny that this data is very meaningful. All of the data that you saw up there was statistically significant at the 0.01 level. The ones that that I indicated in the Paleozoic were significant at the 0.01 level. What does this mean? It means that the conventional models for depositing sediment don't work. The data is not explained by conventional models, therefore it must be explained by some model that's not invented yet. And I'm going to suggest, I'm going to be brave tonight, and I'm going to present this data this fall at the Geological Society meetings, and I will not be telling them this, but I'm going to suggest that this indicates some kind of a singular event, such as a global catastrophe, is responsible for this data. How else could you explain the directionality and the changes through time if it wasn't a process that affected pretty much uniformly the entire surface of North America? I have just now gotten to the place where I can begin to look at the data, and I can't even share with you tonight some of the exciting things that I've seen because I can't back them up. But I can tell you that you're going to hear more about this. And when you hear more about it, you're going to see more details come out. And we're trying very hard to come up with an explanation which will encompass all of this data and all of the other data that we have on geologic models and will, in fact, look good as a geologic model for Earth history. If we can replace the existing model with a better model, then maybe other geologists will see the light in this and will want to join us. It's a wonderful opportunity. I feel privileged to have had a part in it, and I hope that you will hear more from me in the future. Thank you.
You have been listening to another special American Christian Ministries presentation. This recording has been digitally reprocessed from the original audio cassette or reel-to-reel in order to make this CD available. The audio quality was improved as much as possible. International copyright, American Christian Ministries. All rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.AmericanChristianMinistries.org. There you would discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with our speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.